Good morning, Sacramento Central Church. I was looking on my calendar. It's been almost 12 years since I last spoke for the Divine Hour at Sacramento Central. At that time, I lived in Oklahoma. Now I live in Weimar, California. And although I'm speaking at the Sacramento Central Church and to its members and visitors today, I realize that this is a different time period, because although I'm speaking to you, I'm actually presently at Weimar Institute. But with COVID and the churches closed, I hope this is a message that moves you forward greatly in regards to following God's plan for your life. Our title today is Solving the Number One Problem in All of the World. And it turns out if we solve this number one problem in all the world, we will also be able to live the psychological good life. This is what everyone is searching for in the world. Everyone that comes to Weimar, Sacramento Central, or doesn't come to those places, everyone is actually desiring to live the good life. And when we talk about problems that prohibit us from living the good life, we start to focus in on things that the world views are top problems, but are not really the number one problem in all the world. If you were to speak to a lot of world leaders today, you would probably hear that COVID-19 might be the number one problem in all the world. It is a big problem. There are over 4 million Americans as of this date that have tested positive. And there have been over 100,000 of them die from COVID-19. And it's not just an American problem, it's a worldwide problem. And there have been too many deaths and too many infections caused by COVID-19. If they didn't say that was the number one problem in all the world, they might say race relations is the number one problem in all the world. Or maybe immigration issues. Yes, race relations have killed far too many people, and it is a big problem in our world today. And there are other problems, such as the environment. Some people, political leaders, might say global warming is the number one problem in all of the world. And these are things that the world actually has a tendency to major in minors a little bit and then miss the very major things. And this is a prime example today. What actually is the number one problem in all of the world causes far more deaths than COVID-19, causes far more problems with relationships and race relationships, but beyond that, even into family relationships, and financial failure, and all sorts of implications are due to this number one problem in all the world. And that is a problem of lack of self-control. So let's talk about this. I first began to recognize this issue after I attended a conference in 1991. I was a young physician. I'd come out of my training. I had taught in a residency program. And this title of this conference crossed my desk. The first international conference on the elimination of coronary artery disease. That wasn't talking about just preventing it, but eliminating it. In 1991, I was spending a lot of time in the hospital admitting patients with coronary artery disease. They were having congestive heart failure. They were having heart attacks. They were having arrhythmias. They were having all sorts of problems that were linked to atherosclerosis and coronary artery disease. And when I saw the speakers of this conference, it was actually given in Tucson, Arizona, I told my wife, even though we've just had a child in August, we need to go. Our oldest child at that time was 2 months old, and he took his first plane flight into Tucson, Arizona, and we attended this great conference. There were speakers from University of California, San Francisco. There were speakers from Harvard, from Cornell, from Ivy League schools. And these were top researchers telling us that this disease could be eliminated from the planet. And when I was hearing this, I was recording the lectures, I was taking notes, I was thinking, my life is going to change so much in the next 25 years when heart disease is not even in the top 10 causes of death, when I'm not admitting patients. I wonder what I will be, what the number one problem or the number one disease will be in all of the world in 25 years. It'll be far different, because this information given by the best researchers in the world is going to go around the world exponentially, and coronary artery disease will be eliminated. That's what I actually thought. But you know what? 25 years has passed. And more than 25 years have passed. And what do you think the number one cause of death is still in America today? It's actually coronary artery disease. So why has the world not changed that much? Yes, we have had less, we do have less per capita disease than we used to, because some people are putting this information into practice. But it's a significant minority of people that put this into practice. And so the world really isn't that much different. It's actually not COVID-19 that's the number one cause of death. It's coronary artery disease, and it can be completely eliminated through diet and lifestyle measures. The reason why the world has not changed that much is not due to lack of good scientific information. In fact, we now know that the information that was presented by Dr. Ornish and others at that conference is actually more true today than we knew that it was then. The lifestyle heart trials and so many other trials that show that disease can be reversed and eliminated through nutrition and lifestyle measures is well documented. It's actually due to a mental illness that is prevalent in almost every person in the world. And that mental illness is not depression or anxiety, although it can be linked to it. It's actually a mental illness that a lot more than 4 million Americans have that have COVID-19. A lot of people with COVID-19 do have this problem, but it surpasses COVID-19 in regards to its prevalence. This is present in almost every person in the world, and that is lack of self-control. Self-control, by definition, is the ability to keep ourselves from acting on our behavioral or emotional impulses. Self-control failure, according to a recent review by Baumeister from Stanford, is central to nearly all the personal and social problems that currently plague citizens of the modern developed world. Now, it doesn't say it is all problems. It says what? Nearly all. And so when we get to nearly all, you realize this is a huge problem. And Dr. Baumeister himself, it's not just me, he calls it the number one problem in all the world. And by the way, Baumeister is the number one quoted researcher today in all of science, but yet people don't necessarily quote that section of what he has to say, so that we can somehow be fogged in regards to what the real bigger problems are. Interestingly, this self-control failure, even though it's the number one problem in all the world, the Democrats don't talk about it. The Republicans don't talk about it. The president doesn't talk about it. The leaders of Congress that oppose the president don't talk about it. The news media does not talk about it. CNN doesn't talk about it. Fox News doesn't talk about it. This is the elephant in the world. And essentially, nobody is talking about it. And when they do, it doesn't get broadcast. And this is such a shame, because if we would start focusing in on the number one problem in all the world, we might be able to solve a lot of these other problems, including race relations and COVID-19. Lack of self-control is actually the major cause of heart disease. When we know how to prevent it, and we even know how to eliminate it through nutrition and lifestyle, but we don't do it, the problem is not our heart. The problem is in our mind. Diabetes is dramatically going up in this country. Yes, genetics loads the gun, but it's lifestyle that pulls the trigger. And if you have the bad genes for type 2 diabetes, which is what 95% of diabetics are now in America, You don't ever have to get the disease if you stay lean and if you exercise and if you eat a low-fat, plant-based diet. You'll never get it. Sexually transmitted diseases. We were told back in the 1990s that if we had condoms disseminated everywhere and pornography readily available, we would eliminate these diseases. Interestingly, those things were done, but sexually transmitted diseases have gone up, not down. And by the way, none of those liberal scientists, social scientists that were telling us this, have apologized for what they stated, even though sexually transmitted disease is now going off the charts. The problem is actually lack of self-control. Stroke, so many strokes are due to lack of control of blood pressure, lack of control of doing the things that would prevent atherosclerosis, or control in regards to even taking appropriate blood thinners if we have a condition called atrial fibrillation. And so many strokes are due to lack of self-control. Alcoholism, by definition, we know it's a problem, but we can't seem to stop due to lack of self-control. Murder rates have been going up in this country, and most of those murders are actually due to lack of self-control. Rape is not going down, it's going up. And rape is actually due to lack of self-control. Once we know the principles of mentally healthful living and we begin to experience depression, depression can actually be due to lack of self-control. Harvard says 80% of cancers are actually preventable if we would put into action through diet and lifestyle and other measures what we know is best in preventing cancer. 80%. Now, it doesn't mean 100%. There's 20% of cancers that we don't know how to prevent them, even with good comprehensive self-control, but 80% of them would be. Unwanted pregnancy, by definition, lack of self-control. Adultery and divorce, so many times due to lack of self-control on the behalf of one or both partners. Underachievement. As president of Weimar University, I attend continuing education conferences for university presidents around the state of California and in other locations. The number one reason college presidents lose sleep is the underachievement and mental health challenges of their students, which are at an all-time high. They've got a good brain, but they're not achieving due to lack of self-control in their life. And often it's due to technology addictions that are taking them away from being able to be successful. Financial failure. Often due to lack of self-control. Relationship problems, often due to lack of self-control. And then addictions, virtually every addiction, whether it's gambling, whether it's alcohol, whether it's marijuana, which is also an addiction, or technology addictions. These addictions are at an all-time high. Why is that? Because lack of self-control is also at an all-time high. But this is not a new problem. For our world today, it's a problem that's been around a long time. Paul described this in Romans chapter 7. He says, I don't really understand myself. I want to do what is right, but I don't do it. Instead, I do what I hate. I want to do what is good, but I don't. I don't want to do what is wrong, but I do it anyway. There's another power within me that is at war with my mind. This power makes me a slave to sin that is still within me. And then he says one of the saddest texts in all of the Bible. Oh, what a miserable and wretched person I am. Who will free me from this life that is dominated by sin and death? Fortunately, Paul doesn't end the discourse there, and he begins to then give us the secret of self-control. Interestingly, those words, wretched, if we go back to Romans 7:24, wretched and miserable. That word wretched is used in the most famous Christian hymn, Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound that saved a what? A wretch like me. That's talking about lack of self-control and getting yourself into trouble due to that lack of self-control. But only one other place in Scripture is it mentioned, and it's mentioned to the last church of Laodicea. This is in the book of Revelation, the last book of the Bible. And in speaking particularly of this church, God knew in time that this church was going to have a particular issue with lack of self-control, and so would society around it. And Christ says this, because you say, I am rich, have become wealthy, and have need of nothing, and do not know that you are wretched, miserable, poor, blind, and naked. Wow, these are people that think they have it together. Why? Because they have assets. They might have cars. They might have houses. They might have food on the table whenever they want it. They might have nice things. And so they're thinking, you know what? I think I've got it together. But underneath it all, they're wretched. They're miserable. And why does it also say that they're naked? What is it that they don't have? They actually don't have the righteousness of Christ. Christ's robe of righteousness. What does that mean? That means this condition can have eternal consequences. Not only can it cause premature death for us now, and premature divorce, and relationship problems, and all sorts of issues, but it can also affect our eternal salvation. So, what is the secret to avoiding this wretchedness that is so prevalent in the world today? First, I will tell you what secular science says is the secret. And they're on to a lot of the secrets of this, as you will see. But then I will also tell you the overarching principle that if we incorporate this into our life, we will have complete victory and be able to have comprehensive self-control. First, the social scientists, the secular scientists of today, tell us that temperance is the solution. Now, of course, at Weimar Institute, we have trademarked the name or acronym New Start. The N is nutrition, the E is exercise, the W is water, the S is sunlight. But the first T is temperance. And this is something that Weimar is very much for. We recognize it as an important remedy for optimal health. Temperance is moderation in the things that are healthy and abstinence in the things that are unhealthy. And it turns out that strict temperance requires not just selective self-control, but comprehensive self-control. Did you know that everybody has selective self-control? I've met people that come to our depression and anxiety recovery program, and sometimes they'll say, my big problem, Dr. Nedley, is I have no self-control in my life. And as I get to know them, I will realize they actually do have very important selective self-control in a section of their life. Some of these individuals who've told me they have no self-control, they do have selective self-control when it comes to watering their marijuana plant, when it comes to making sure it's in the right soil, when it comes to make sure of harvesting it at the right time, they do have self-control in that selective area. But in order to have temperance, we have to have comprehensive self-control. Now, Arnold Schwarzenegger, he's one that we might say is wealthy and has need of nothing. Arnold Schwarzenegger is actually now the most famous governor ever of the state of California. Not because he was governor, but because of what he did before he became governor. And it wasn't Terminator that made him famous. The reason why he got into Terminator was Mr. Universe. Does it take self-control to build up muscles like Arnold Schwarzenegger did? Absolutely. It takes meticulous self-control. You have to be at the gym when you don't want to be at the gym. You have to do the repetitions that you don't want to do. You have to produce pain in your body that you're not wanting to do, but you're looking at the long-term goal in that area. You have to eat the right foods. You have to take the right supplements. And Arnold Schwarzenegger became famous because he had meticulous self-control in that area. But in an area of his life where it was more important for him to have self-control, when his maid was cleaning the house, he lacked it. And he lost the love of his life due to not having comprehensive self-control. He did not want to lose the love of his life. But when his wife came and said, "Wait a minute, Arnold, this was going on for how long? You've had a child and you haven't told me about it or been transparent until this child basically becomes an adult and then comes and tells us all of these things. Arnold, I can't trust you. I'm sorry. I can't be married to you anymore." And he became miserable and wretched. He's tried to cover up that in other ways. But the real problem that caused his issues was not having comprehensive self-control. So here's what the secular scientists tell us. In our endeavor to measure this class of strengths, we have found that among people in the mainstream developed world, strengths of temperance are infrequently endorsed and seldom praised. Regardless, the strengths of temperance are very important, and they have a rich array of positive consequences for the psychological good life. For the what? The psychological good life. In other words, if you have temperance, if you have comprehensive self-control, you will begin to experience the good life that everyone is searching for. And not just the physical good life, but the psychological good life, which is even more important than the physical. How do they know this? Because they have been studying, the social scientists have been studying self-control recently. And in order to study it, first you have to measure it. And I would like you, as you're watching here today, to see if you can identify if this would make you, if you answered these questions affirmatively, if it would make you have high self-control as far as the measurement is concerned, or low self-control. I'll give you the answer for the first one. If you say, "I am very good at resisting temptation," that's number 5, very much, you would be rated on that test in that area of having high self-control. How about this one? "I have a hard time breaking bad habits." Low. "I do certain things that are bad for me if they are fun." Low. "I have trouble saying no." Low self-control. "Getting up in the morning is hard for me." Low self-control. "I blurt out whatever is on my mind." Low self-control. "I spend too much money." That's also low self-control. "I keep everything neat." That's high self-control. "I get carried away by my feelings." That's low self-control. "I do many things on the spur of the moment." Also low self-control. "I don't keep secrets very well." That's low. "I often interrupt people." Also low. "I'm always on time." That's high self-control. "I'm not easily discouraged." That's high self-control. "I eat healthy foods." Again, high self-control. "Pleasure and fun sometimes keep me from getting work done." That's low self-control. "I have trouble concentrating." Low. "Sometimes I can't stop myself from doing something even if I know it is wrong." That's low. "I'm able to work effectively towards long-term goals." That's high self-control. So you get an idea of what they're testing, and this is just a partial self-control test. I didn't ask you all of the questions on this test. But then when we see what those scores are in the tests, and then we follow these people prospectively over time, we start noticing some very significant differences in humanity. Those who score high on self-control have better personality adjustment, higher self-worth, they're better at controlling their anger, they have fewer symptoms of somatization, obsessive-compulsive patterns, depression, anxiety, hostile anger, phobic anxiety, paranoid ideations, and even psychotic tendencies. In addition, people with high self-control accept themselves as valuable, worthy individuals and are relatively able to sustain this favorable view of self across time and circumstances. And this occurs without registering inflated or narcissistic views of self. So they have a high degree of self-worth, but not necessarily self-esteem, because they don't think they're better than other people. They just see the infinite value of everybody, including themselves. People with high self-control have been found to be more conscientious, more emotionally stable, make better relationship partners, get along better with other people, They're more accommodating, actually not less accommodating of others. They report more satisfying relationships in all areas, including marriage and work and school and in-laws and all of those relationships. And they have better adjustment in their relationships. In addition, people with high self-control have better family cohesiveness, less interpersonal conflict, better perspective, and they actually have better empathy of other people, not less empathy. They don't wallow in their own personal reactions to other people's problems. They have more secure interpersonal attachments. They manage money well, they spend less, and they save more. And so, of course, this is also very favorable. Now, interestingly, in the course of daily life, in spite of their best efforts at self-control, the social scientists tell us people inevitably sin and transgress, at least on rare occasion. It's interesting the terms that they use. These are secular people and aren't religious, but they're using the terms sin and transgression. And they say even those with very high self-control will occasionally mess up in an area that requires self-control. Now, interestingly, here's what they state. People with high self-control who mess up score relatively low in shame and high in shame-free guilt. What does that mean? Individuals with high self-control are inclined to take responsibility for their transgressions rather than externalizing blame or minimizing the importance of the transgression. So in other words, when you have low self-control and you mess up, you tend to blame your mess up on others, or you tend to minimize it and say, this was no big deal. I don't know why you're talking about it. It's not really a mess up like you're making it out to be. But not so with people with high self-control. In short, having done wrong, high self-control people are inclined to focus on the effects of their behavior, and in so doing are inclined to make amends. In contrast, low self-control individuals are more apt to experience painful feelings of shame, an emotion that often provokes the two D's, defensiveness and denial, where a high self-control individual, when they mess up, they go to the two R's instead of the two D's. They go into repair and redemption. So what does this mean? This means if you have high comprehensive self-control, even though you're not going to be perfect, when you mess up, you're going to become a better person. In other words, you're going to go into repair and redemption. But when you're a low self-control person and you mess up, you get painful feelings of shame and you blame others and go into either defensiveness or denial. And you know, my father, when I was growing up, would state, there are two types of people, Neil, those with 20 years of experience and then others with 1 year of experience 20 times over. Those are individuals that are not learning from their mistakes and they continue to repeat them. And that's because they haven't found the principles in their life and the secret of living the comprehensive self-control lifestyle that we will be talking about. Now, interestingly, unlike some of the other remedies of New Start, like nutrition and exercise, where you can get too much, or even water, water's great. Most people don't drink enough, but you can get too much water. They thought, could you have too much self-control? And so they looked at it, and they found no studies anywhere demonstrating any undesirable consequences of high self-control. And they've been looked for. Tangney tested for curvilinearity to see if excessive self-control might produce negative consequences, but no negative patterns were found. Those with the highest levels of self-control only were better in all of these areas. There was no negativity that started as a result of high self-control. So although they state there may exist a stereotype of an over-controlled person, one who's overly restrained, cautious, uptight, and not spontaneous, we see no evidence that self-control is to be blamed. In other words, it's you have other problems. It's not too much self-control. But then they also state this. After they talk about how great it is and what a wonderful thing it is and how you're going to experience a psychological good life, better relationships, more financial stability, better home relationships, and also better health, physical health and mental health and all of these significant advantages, they state something pretty sad in the secular science world. Relatively little is known about how self-control is acquired and strengthened. This topic must be regarded as a high priority for further research, especially in view of the many benefits that self-control confers. And I would agree, it needs to be a high priority. And there's so many benefits. This is really, since it's the number one problem, we ought to be spending all sorts of resources on trying to solve this number one problem. But we have learned some things in the secular science world. Most acts of self-control involve overcoming some incipient response to the immediate situation in order to pursue some greater long-term benefit. Hence, the ability to transcend the immediate situation is crucial. People who live only in the present moment are unlikely to exhibit good self-control, whereas future-mindedness will facilitate self-regulation. This is one of the reasons why even Eastern meditation has not been able to help in regards to self-control, because it's talking about living in the moment, living in the present only, where we need to have future-mindedness. We need to be able to look forward to the future. That means we need to have the frontal lobe strengthening and building up. This can produce a dramatic difference in our self-control. And by the way, speaking of future-mindedness in a positive sense, the one word for that that is used repeatedly in Scripture is called hope. Now, Dr. Baumeister at Stanford has shown the advantages of bright lines in self-control. He says people need bright lines. These really help with self-control. What does he identify as a bright line? Zero tolerance is a bright line, he says. Total abstinence with no exceptions anytime. So when we tell ourselves, I'm not going to cross this boundary, this is going to be a bright line, I will go on this side of it, but I'm never going to go on that side, it actually helps us with self-control. And then he's also discovered this. If you believe that the rule is sacred, a commandment from God, the unquestionable law of a higher power, then it becomes an especially bright line. Now, Baumeister himself is not a religious person, but he teaches psychology over in Stanford. And he was teaching three psychology classes. And in Stanford, they have a major problem, in, as they do in a lot of Ivy League schools. It's called cheating. Because the students don't have self-control leading up to the test, they often try to make it through the test by cheating. Baumeister is very well aware of this. So he told them it was going to be a very hard test, and it was going to separate them out, and they might not be able to continue at Stanford further if they failed this, because it was so important. And so before the first test, he had them read the school's honor code that talks about no cheating. And he found out, because he designed the test in such a way where you could immediately tell if there was cheating, there was widespread cheating after reading the school's honor code. He then thought, well, let's see if positive psychology helps. So the next test group, he had them recite their 10 most positive favorite books before taking the test. With their mind shifted into positive things before the test, there was still widespread cheating. The third group, he had them actually read the 10 Commandments and put their hand on a Bible and raise their other hand as they were reciting the 10 Commandments. Not one person cheated after doing that. And that's why he said, if you believe the rule is sacred, a commandment from God, the unquestionable law of a higher power, then it becomes an especially bright line. Now, not all those students were believers in God. There's a lot of agnostics and atheists at Stanford. But after reading that, being not too sure, because you can't really prove that there is no God, despite the post-truth era people who think that they're actually proving that. It's ludicrous, and it's not provable that there is no God. Nonetheless, after reading that, not one student at Stanford, even the atheists and agnostics, did not cheat. Now, if you want to read more about that study, you can get his book, Rediscovering the Greatest Human Strength, Willpower, by Roy Baumeister. The Bible states this, he that is slow to anger is better than the mighty. And he that ruleth his spirit, if you're ruling your spirit, what do you have? Self-control. Then he that taketh the city. Commentary on this text by Solomon says this: he has conquered self, the strongest foe man has to meet. The highest evidence of nobility in a Christian is self-control. He who can stand unmoved amid a storm of abuse is one of God's heroes. He who has learned to rule his spirit will rise above the slights, the rebuffs, the annoyances to which we are daily exposed, and these will cease to cast a gloom over his spirit. It's interesting. Even people with high self-control have bad things happen to them. They'll be slighted. They'll be annoyed. There'll be others that try to do them in or are jealous of them and do things to try to hurt them intentionally. And these might be part of their daily life. But these things don't cast a gloom over their spirit. The writer goes on, "It is God's purpose that the kingly power of sanctified reason, controlled by divine grace, shall bear sway in the lives of human beings. He who rules his spirit is in possession of this power." Then this interesting phrase, "The man or woman who preserves the balance of the mind when tempted to indulge passion stands higher in the sight of God and heavenly angels than the most renowned general that ever led an army to battle and to victory." Now, this is something very important for everyone to understand. Some Christians believe that if they ask God to do so, he will perform psychic surgery on them so they'll never want to sin and will never sin again. God is not going to do that because his principle in the universe, overarching principle of love and truth, is based upon freedom. We can't love if we're not free to do so. And if we have freedom of choice, then we have freedom to go the other way. He's never going to take freedom away, because if he does, he'll take love away. And so in order to have love, we have to have freedom. And that means the way he is going to help us is to help us preserve the balance of our mind. That means our frontal lobe is in charge of our limbic system, our lower brain, which the Bible calls the carnal nature. And the frontal lobe can actually overpower this, and we can make the choice. It's still our choice. And that's why it's called the willpower, where our will is placed, and thus our choices are made in regards to comprehensive self-control and seeing the long-term benefit for ourselves and also others. So in assistance in self-control, the secular world has told us bright lines help, worthy goals help. This is why we want to establish purpose and worthy goals. Enhancing the frontal lobe with beautiful harp music, melodious music, has been shown to be helpful. Slowing down a limbic system in overdrive, that means getting rid of the syncopated rock and roll rhythms. That means getting rid of entertainment television. The rapid scene of reference of entertainment television speeds up our limbic system, and it can start to overpower our frontal lobe. And as important as those things are, the fail-safe solution to comprehensive self-control we are now getting to. Listen to this. What young men and women need is Christian heroism. To rule the spirit means to keep self under discipline. Notice how this happens. God's abounding love and presence in the heart will give the power of self-control and will mold and fashion the mind and character. So we call it self-control, but the power actually comes from outside of us. It's actually God's abounding love and presence in the heart that gives this power of self-control and molds and fashion the mind and character. "By this shall all men know that ye are my disciples," says Jesus, quoted by John. "If ye have" what? "One to another?" It's love. And this also plays a role. If we would be true lights in the world, we must manifest the loving, compassionate spirit of Christ. To love as Christ loved means that we must do what? Practice self-control. How do we do that? It means that we must show unselfishness at all times and in all places. So the key to self-control is actually self-sacrifice. And it's a self-sacrificing love. That's why it's not something that we can generate. because naturally we are selfish individuals. And if there's a corner of selfishness in our life, that means there's going to be a corner of lack of self-control in our life. The solution is to put all on the altar of sacrifice laid and ask God to infuse us with His love. His love is the self-sacrificing agape love. And true transformative healing is dependent on this love. Love can change you, and it has changed me, and it can change the world. Not erotic love, romantic love, or even brotherly love, as good as those loves are in their time and place. It's a love that human nature totally lacks. I would encourage you, take hold of love and kindness and compassion for others. Spread it around. Kind words, pleasant looks, little attentions for others, small acts of love. Let it flow to others, and it will increase the blessings and happiness of life. My Life Today says genuine love is a precious attribute of heavenly origin, that's where it comes from, which increases in fragrance in proportion as it is dispensed to others. So not only can you and I get this love today, but we can get more of it tomorrow. How do we do that? By dispensing that love to others. And we can continue to be a channel and get more and more of this genuine love from heavenly origin. Ellen White says, a little attentions, the small acts of love and self-sacrifice that flow out from the life as quietly as the fragrance from a flower. These constitute no small share of the blessings and happiness of life. And they are equated to what secular science tells us is the psychological good life. So before we close, two examples in self-control. We could give many. The world is filled with many examples of lack of self-control and a few of comprehensive self-control. But these two met. And what a contrast when they did. Paul before Nero, how striking the contrast. The countenance of the monarch, which is Nero, bearing the shameful record of the passions that raged within. The countenance of the prisoner, which is Paul, telling the story of a heart at peace with God and with man. The results of opposite systems of education stood that day contrasted. Education, notice, opposite systems. By the way, there's opposite systems in our world today. Most educational systems will tell you to watch out for number one. And number one is you. But Weimar Institute says number one is not you. Number one is God and His love. Notice the statement. Results of opposite systems of education stood that contrast. That a life of unbounded self-indulgence, that was Nero, and a life of entire self-sacrifice. That was Paul. Here were the representatives of two theories of life. All-absorbing selfishness, which counts nothing too valuable to be sacrificed for momentary gratification. That statement characterizes much of the world around us and why the world is filled with problems. And notice the contrast in Paul. Self-denying endurance, ready to give up even life itself, if need be, for the good of others. We're told if the soul is to be purified and ennobled and made fit for the heavenly courts, there are two lessons to be learned in everybody. These two lessons will be present in everyone who not only experiences the psychological good life here on this earth, but actually experiences the rewards of eternal life to follow. What are those two lessons? Self-sacrifice and self-control. You know, this tells us why that conference in Tucson, Arizona did not change the world. The conference was filled with great scientific information that was revolutionary at the time of how we could eliminate the number one disease of humanity in the world today. But it didn't tell us how to have self-control. and for physical, mental, and emotional and spiritual health to be comprehensive and lifelong, it demands the gospel to be complete. There was no gospel in that conference. There was no explanation of putting selfishness aside and actually allowing your heart to be filled with God's self-sacrificing agape love. And I've noticed that many criticize, even among worldlings that don't have great self-control, they will criticize other human beings that they think are lower than themselves. And often the lowest aspect of humanity is manifest in a hospital when someone comes in with hepatic encephalopathy, cirrhosis of the liver, their toxins are built up, they're out of their gourd, they're fighting the nurse as she's trying to put the NG tube down to save the patient's life, and trying to give medicine into the gut that will get rid of the liver toxins. And often those nurses tell me, "Dr. Nedley, why are we doing this to help this patient? He's just gonna go out and drink again. He has done this to himself." And so they criticize patients that don't exercise self-control, even when it could obviously help them. But I look at these alcoholics with cirrhosis of the liver and hepatic encephalopathy far different. Once those toxins are out and their frontal lobe is able to function again, I can then explain to them the comprehensive ultimate secret to self-control, putting their all on the altar and giving their life to God and letting Him fill them with His love. Such patients, many of them, have actually gone out of the hospital never to drink again. I actually look at individuals that seem to have it all together but have only one vice is actually worse individuals. The first individual doesn't want to drink. They don't want to do things to harm themselves, but they don't know the secret. Many of these individuals that have just one vice, they actually have been introduced to the secret, but haven't taken advantage of it. And they think, this one vice I like so much that I'm going to get the good part of that and I will experience the self-indulgent part of this one vice. But the difference between good and great is exponential. These people, when they pass to their graves, they might have a lot of good things said about them because they had a lot of selective self-control in multiple areas. But they don't realize how they could have been a Daniel, a Joseph, a Moses, someone with transformative influence in the world if they had fallen on the rock and gone completely into comprehensive self-control. The difference between good and great is exponential, and that one vice will keep you away from greatness. Not only that, it can kill you, and it may kill you. And it will certainly hurt others as well as they see someone that seems to have it all together experiencing this vice. And it certainly gets in the way of true self-sacrificing love. Ellen White agrees and says, "The strongest bulwark of vice in our world is not the iniquitous life of the abandoned sinner or the degraded outcast that so many criticize. It is the life which otherwise appears virtuous, honorable, and noble, but in which one sin is fostered, one vice indulged." I would encourage you today to take hold of the secret that Paul had when he overcame. He told his secret in Romans 7:25 and on, but also in 1 Corinthians 15, he narrowed it down to three words. Do you remember what his secret was? I die daily. Daily giving your all on the altar of sacrifice to be filled completely with God's love for the day. And now you can see the importance of medical missionary work. This is the work that is particularly to reach the world. The world wants to experience a psychological good life. They know a lot of science that could help them get there, but they don't know how to have comprehensive self-control. And that's why they need institutions like Weimar. That's why they need training centers like Weimar. That's why there needs to be a Weimar outside of every major city in America. And medical missionary work will begin to circle the globe. This is a prediction that Ellen White made, and the reason why I can tell you that Christ is not coming back tomorrow. We have taken his message of the gospel in some sections. We've given the message of teaching, but the Christian church has not taken Christ's message of healing to the world. And we're told before he comes back, it's going to be the threefold ministry. Yes, the gospel of preaching. Yes, the teaching, but also the healing. And the healing has to come with comprehensive self-control. She says, we will see the medical missionary work broadening and deepening at every point of its progress because of the inflowing of hundreds and thousands of streams until the whole earth is covered as the waters cover the sea. This message will encircle the globe. And people will have the choice. Am I going to give my life to God and have him be number one in my life? Or is it going to be me number one? Everyone is searching for the good life. But today, as a result of you hearing and engaging in this message, you know how to start the road that ultimately gets there. I would encourage you, don't pursue any more substitutes of self-centeredness and put yourself number one and think that that's going to get you to the good life, because the studies show clearly it does not get you there. Instead, choose comprehensive self-control. Even the secular scientists tell us there's no downside. Put your all on the altar of sacrifice laid. Give yourself to God. Open your heart to his love. When Paul was getting ready for his ultimate sacrifice, putting his life on the line for the Lord, he was passing the baton to the young Timothy. In his last treatise to Timothy, he said this: God gave us a spirit not of fear, but of power and love. The love that he used was the self-sacrificing agape love that comes from God, and self-control. Brothers and sisters, I would encourage you to adopt this life. Take hold of this power of God's love in your life. And the health message can give you an idea whether you have really put all on the altar. Because if you're violating the principles of health in your life, even on occasion, that's a sign that you need to go into repair and redemption and put all on the altar of sacrifice laid. Let's bow our heads. Father in heaven, we thank you for revealing to us, perhaps in a more crystal clear way, on how we can experience true victory in you. The world is looking for the good life, but they don't realize they get there through you. They get there by putting you number one and by putting themselves and their carnal desires on the altar of sacrifice laid. If there's anyone here that is listening to this message today who perhaps has struggled with self-control issues in their life in some way, shape, or form, and now has a desire to choose comprehensive self-control and the method to get there, to put their all on the altar of sacrifice laid, to say, as did Paul, I die daily, and God, infuse me with your self-sacrificing love in everything that I do. I would like you to raise your hands, even though you may not be at a church, raise your hands to God where you are, and he will see your hand. Lord, you see the hands that are raised, those that are choosing comprehensive self-control in their life and are choosing to put you instead of their carnal desires number one. We pray, Lord, that you will bless each one and that you will indeed give them a balanced mind where their frontal lobe can choose over their limbic system and they can live in the spirit instead of in the flesh. And we thank you for the good life that will be coming their way. A life of fulfillment, a life of peace, a life of love to others, a life like Joseph and Daniel and Paul and Mary and so many others. And we thank you for hearing and answering this prayer on behalf of each one who has made this decision. And all the people said, Amen and Amen.